You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Thursday, July 1st, 2021, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, wow, the Orioles just went into Minute Maid Park and swept the Houston Astros, one of the hottest teams and frankly the best teams in baseball at the moment. We will recap Game 3, the final game of the series from Wednesday night, tell you the five things you need to know from the Orioles' 5-2 victory over the Astros that gave them the sweep. Then coming up a little bit later, Zach Goodman is going to join the podcast once again. He is the co-host of the Nate Hit the Foul Pole pod and the co-host of the Bat Around over at Pressbox every Saturday morning with Paul Valley. And Zach's going to join us to give out some Orioles midseason awards. Believe it or not, Wednesday night game was the 81st game of the season for the Orioles. That's the halfway point of the 162-game season here in 2021. We're going to give out some awards like Orioles MVP and Cy Young, but also talk about, you know, most surprising, most disappointing player, best and worst game of the first half, and much, much more with Zach Goodman. So that's all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by another podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network that is Locked On MLB Prospects. If you're the type of baseball fan that can't help but get giddy over prospects, we have the podcast for you. Locked On MLB Prospects, hosted by minor league play-by-play voice Aram Layton, is the only daily podcast devoted entirely to the stars of tomorrow. Follow Locked On MLB Prospects on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods. So today we start with what is still maybe the most shocking series and frankly the best series of baseball the Orioles may have played this season. They beat the Astros 5-2 on the road on Wednesday night and complete a three-game sweep at Minute Maid Park. This is a team that just last Friday snapped a 20-game road losing streak, and after they did that, lost the next two road games as well. This is an Orioles team that had just got bludgeoned at home in a three-game series and were swept by the Astros at Camden Yards last week in three games that frankly weren't that competitive. They come into Houston and win all three. And all three were exciting wins in their own way, but quickly wanted to get you the five things you need to know from the Orioles' 5-2 win in Game 3 to complete the sweep. And the first thing you need to know from the game is that, you know what? Matt Harvey wasn't great once again. But Matt Harvey was still much, much better than he had been lately. And he somewhat built off what was a pretty solid start he had last Friday night in Buffalo. And of course, Matt Harvey was the one who started the game last Friday when the Orioles snapped the 20-game road losing streak. And he was better in that one. He allowed three runs over 5 2/3. But this one, you know, he didn't really give the Orioles length. He went 4 1/3, but he only gave up two runs on four hits. He struck out three. He walked two. It took him 79 pitches. Only four hard hit balls for Matt Harvey, which has really been the issue for him. His ERA now down to 7.34 on the season. And again, Harvey didn't get deep into the game, but, you know, he used his stuff effectively. And what was really interesting for Matt Harvey in this one is how he really worked those pitches. You know, he really split up the sinker and the four-seamer. The fastball went 57% of the time, but it was kind of split between the sinker version of his fastball and the four-seamer. Threw 15 sliders, 12 curveballs, 7 changeups. You know, he really mixed his stuff. He only got 5 whiffs on 79 pitches, but he got softer contact, much softer contact than he has been used to this season. And that allowed him to get through 4 1/3. And again, I know he would have wished to get through longer. And he only threw 79 pitches. He probably had more in the tank. But the Orioles went to the bullpen at the right time. And that's where we get to the second thing you need to know. Tanner Scott was really peak Tanner Scott in this game and was a huge reason that the Orioles were able to win this one. Tanner Scott faced 5 batters in this game, retired them all, and had 4 strikeouts, taking just 19 pitches to do it. He came into the 5th inning in relief of Matt Harvey with runners on first and second and one away, with the Orioles leading 4-2 at the time. All he did was come right in. He was able to strike out Michael Brantley. He got Yuli Gurriel to pop up and got out of the 5th. Then he came right back out there in the sixth inning facing Alvarez, Correa, and Tucker. And he struck out the side. He was throwing strikes. He was throwing absolute gas. I mean, he was able to hit 99 with the fastball, was sitting around 97 on the day. 19 pitches, 15 fastballs, just four sliders. And, you know, I think that's kind of indicative of Tanner Scott having it, because I feel like sometimes this year when he loses his command, he loses the command of the fastball and you see him throw a lot of sliders. The fact that he only threw four sliders in 19 pitches and, you know, got five batters out of the five he faced and four strikeouts, that's how you kind of know he was on, and he was definitely on in this game. Third thing you need to know is that the rest of the bullpen was pretty much just as dominant in some more interesting roles. After Tanner Scott got through the fifth, he finished the sixth. Orioles brought Paul Frye in the seventh. They led 4-2 in the bottom of the seventh. And, you know, Paul Frye has seemingly kind of been the closer lately, although, you know, he hasn't had much save opportunities. But he came in the seventh, and it also wasn't like it was a huge high leverage situation. It was actually the bottom third of the order, Garcia, Straw, and Castro, 7-8-9. Due up in the seventh inning. And Paul Frye, you know, got himself a 1-2-3 inning, did allow a base runner, but got a double play in the seventh. And then, you know, they sent him back there in the eighth, though, to face the top of the order. And, you know, he got one out, he allowed one base runner. And then Brandon Hyde goes to Cole Sulcer, and, you know, Cole Sulcer locks down a five-out save. It was a very interesting bullpen management from Brandon Hyde, but it worked out. Sulcer goes an inning and two-thirds. He retires all five batters he faced. Now, he only struck out one, but again, he got all five outs, all against the middle, you know, the very dangerous part of that Houston Astros order. And Sulcer gets the save, and he was fantastic. Paul was good. Scott was unhittable, and it was one of the best bullpen days for the Orioles here so far this season. You know, Paul Frye wasn't at his best. You know, he threw 21 pitches. He got zero whiffs on the day, even though he got nine swings, zero whiffs, only two called strikes. He wasn't in the zone a whole lot, but he was able to get out of some jams. And then Cole Sulcer, though, he was better. He mixed his pitches. He threw the breaking ball five times out of 20 pitches, a pitch he hasn't used too much. He got four whiffs on the day. He was really good. Fourth thing you need to know from the game is that healthy Austin Hayes is fun Austin Hayes. And Hayes did not start this game. Orioles went with Santander, Mullins, and Stewart in the outfield, with Mountcastle DHing to start the game. So, you know, Hayes did not start. And, you know, the Orioles offense, they look good early without him. They always put up a four-run top of the first against Astros starter Luis Garcia. You know, they took a 4-0 lead. Mountcastle had a two-run double. You had Pedro Severino and Michael Franco each bringing in runs as well. And, you know, it looked like, you know, the offense wouldn't need Austin Hayes. But then the Orioles offense went cold. And for the next six innings, the Orioles did not score. And so in the eighth, with DJ Stewart set to lead off the inning, Orioles leading 4-2, and the Astros rookie left-hander Ryan Hartman was still pitching at that point, Brandon Hyde goes to Austin Hayes as a pinch hitter off the bench. What does he do? Cracks a solo home run to left field, huge insurance run to give the Orioles that 5-2 lead in the eighth inning. And then, of course, Hayes would stay in the game defensively for Stewart and play out the final two innings of the game. That was a huge swing for Austin Hayes. Again, it ended up being his only at-bat of the game, but he made the most of it with that home run. And again, when he is healthy, he is an exciting player to watch. The Orioles need him to stay healthy at this point. And the fifth and final thing you need to know is the day for Michael Franco. He hit sixth in the lineup, started at third base in this one, had a huge day at the plate, ended up with a 3-for-4 with three singles, including an RBI that was an RBI single on a rocket he hit back up the middle in the first inning that gave the Orioles a 3-0 lead at the time. Did not strike out on the day, had four hard hit balls, so even the one time he was retired, hit the ball more than 95 miles per hour off the bat for a hard hit ball. Now, what you do have to know is, you know, in the last batter of the game, going for a ball in foul territory, Franco rolled his ankle, did have to be helped off the field a little bit. So that is something to monitor. And, you know, we know the Orioles infield has been flipped on its head already just in this last week. And if they do lose Franco, it's going to be even more flipped on its head. It's going to be hard to lose Galvis and Franco on the left side if that is the case. So it's something to monitor. But, you know, before that injury, Franco was fantastic and had a huge game for the Orioles. But the O's win it 5-2, and they sweep the Houston Astros in Houston. Orioles 27-54 at the halfway point of this season. That's right, they've played 81 of their 162 games. And so we wanted to look back on the first half of the season. So Zach Goodman going to join us, the co-host of the Nate Hit the Foul Pole pod and the co-host of the Bat Around over at PressBox, talking all things Orioles all the time. And he comes back on the pod to give out some Orioles midseason slash first half awards for this 2021 campaign. We'll talk Orioles MVP, Orioles Cy Young. We'll talk about our favorite and least favorite games of the early part of the season, best rookie, most surprising player, and much, much more. It's a little bit of a long conversation, kind of a long award show, but what award shows don't go a little bit longer than expected. Hope you enjoy it, though, with Zach Goodman giving out the Orioles midseason awards coming up after this break. So we will give out our Orioles midseason awards in just a second, but first, this episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. And the best part about RockAuto.com, the prices are reliably low for every single customer. And they have everything you could need, from brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. So go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And write Locked On Orioles in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, so we are joined by Zach Goodman back here on the podcast. He is, of course, the co-host of the Nate Hit the Foul Pole pod with Matthew Pine. He also co-hosts the Bat Around over at PressBox with Paul Valley. And Zach, first of all, thank you so much for coming back on the pod.
Yeah, appreciate you having me. I know we just talked about this off camera, but you had me on the show the last time when we graded the different players of the Orioles 2020 squad. I think I did the bench players. We were just talking about that. I talked about Pat Valaika and how he was going to be a big contributor. So hopefully I can have some better analysis this time for the 2021 O's.
Yeah, well, we have you on to do something similar here, and that is give out some midseason awards for the Orioles, because I think, you know, the 60-game season in 2020 just messed with everybody's minds about how long a baseball right. season is, at what point you get. Like, it was 3 weeks ago now, maybe even more, where I did an episode comparing the 60 games of this year to the 60 games last year. It's mind-blowing that that was a full season last year. Well, yeah. Here we are, as people listen to this, the Orioles are through exactly 81 games this season, which is half of the normal 162 game MLB season, and we wanted to give out some midseason awards here. And so let's just jump right into it, because I think these first couple, we're going to be on the same page, and I think pretty much anyone who watches this team is going to be on the same page. And we're going to start with the Orioles MVP, and I'm assuming it's the guy who is trying to get himself into the AL MVP race, if not for the existence of Ohtani and Vladdy Jr.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be Cedric Mullins. There is no one else besides Cedric Mullins that you can pick to be the MVP of this team right now. If you looked at this team before the season, there's a few guys you could have picked out. I mean, obviously, Santander was a guy who you could probably say was the front runner for MVP coming into this season. But then you look at Ryan Mountcastle, who's had a great year, not so far an MVP season, but he's had a great year up to this point after a pretty rough April. And you could even throw John Means into that conversation if he wasn't on the injured list right now. I don't know how you feel about making a pitcher MVP. That doesn't obviously happen too often in actual baseball voting, but he could obviously be somewhere here. But Cedric Mullins right now, I mean, we see the whole, you know, vote for Mullins campaign. We see all the things going on with Mullins. You know, every night it seems like it's a 3-4 hit night where he's hitting a home run. He's, you know, he's making a diving play in center field. He's hitting a double to the gap. I mean, this is the most electric an exciting player the Orioles have had, you know, maybe since Manny Machado. It's been a long time since they've had someone this incredible who comes out there every night. You can just rely on it to really put the team ahead. So, you know, Cedric Mullins, it's got to be that guy for MVP right now.
Yeah, of course, I'm on the same page with this one. It's Cedric Mullins. And, you know, we're recording this here Wednesday afternoon, so technically we've got stats from 80 games, so almost a half season. But, I mean, for Mullins, through 79 games that he has played, I mean, that's the other thing. Like, Sunday was his first day off this season. He's played every right. day. He's been out there in center field every day. Not full day off. You know, he had some pinch hitting appearances, but I think Sunday was the first full day he had off. 14 homers, 14 stolen bases. He is on pace for a 25-25 season. And if he ratchets it up a little bit, like, he's not too far off from a 30-30 season, which, like, is unbelievable when you think
imagine saying that in 2019. I mean, imagine even talking about Cedric Mullins as a possible AL MVP. That's incredible that we're at that point.
Yeah. And, you know, we're not just talking about, oh, you know, imagine when he was hitting, you know, that poorly in the majors in 2019, when he was in the Bowie lineup to finish the season as they were trying to win the Eastern League. Imagine saying that. I mean, that's
right
where it's come for Cedric Mullins. I mean, there's not a lot of guys who have that big of a fall, because, you know, when you're slated to be the opening day center fielder and it doesn't work out like it did in 19, you expect a guy to, you know, if it's really bad, maybe he sticks in Norfolk all year, he sticks in AAA and he tries it again next spring training. But to get bumped down to AA is tough. And to respond from that in this way has just been unbelievable. I mean, 323 average, 391 on base, 158 WRC plus. In terms of Fangraphs WAR, Cedric Mullins at 3.7, of course, is top five in the American League, leads the team. Next best is John Means at 1.4. I mean, that's just how much better Mullins has been. Next best position player, Trey Mancini, 1.1. That's how much better Cedric Mullins has been than every other player. And, you know, that's, we're just now factoring in his defense as well, which, you know, he's probably the best defender that is out there every day for the Orioles. And this is just obviously the easiest choice. And, you know, we look down the road and he's going to be an all-star. Hopefully he's a starter, but even if he's not, he's going to be an all-star. And it makes you think, like, you know, he's still 26. He's still fairly young. Like, if he's going to do this throughout this year, our whole perception of what we had of Cedric Mullins coming into this season is completely changed.
Right. I mean, everything. He has done everything that you can want a guy to do. You can want, you know, out of any player in your team, you know, you look at what you want out of, you know, their bat, their defense, whatever it is, Cedric Mullins provides all of it. You know, he's not perfect, obviously nobody is, but the stuff he's doing right now, the numbers he's putting up, it wouldn't have been fathomable back, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Even as, you know, Cedric Mullins was a pretty highly ranked prospect. I think he was like seventh or eighth at his top level in the O's organization coming up in 17 and 18. But, you know, a late round draft pick, not a guy that, you know, anybody talked about to go in like the first round or something. He was in the, I believe, the mid teens, like 13th, 16th around there. Basically a massive jump here for Cedric Mullins from, you know, basically being not much of anything to the franchise player for this team right now. And the guy that everyone wants to watch, everyone wants to buy the jersey, everyone wants to vote him in the All-Star game. You know, it's too bad that he's an Oriole, because he probably would get so much more recognition for what he is and what he's doing if he played in New York or something. But, you know, what he's doing right now, it has to be accepted that this is a really, really solid baseball player.
Yeah, it's been fantastic to watch. And, you know, I have a group chat with a couple of Orioles fan friends. And last night I sent a text that, you know, pretty much sums it up and didn't end up being true, because the Orioles, you know, won that game 13-3. And it was fun to watch them beat up on the Astros. But it was like, the Cedric Mullins leadoff home run game is the perfect game, because what you want right now from the Orioles is Cedric Mullins to do well enough to make the All-Star team. And as soon as he hits that home run to start the game, it's like, does the rest of this game even matter too much?
Right, they could lose 10-1
on what happens.
Like, all right, well, Cedric Mullins hit the leadoff home run, so that's great. I mean, I think I keep talking about it with every show I do personally, that I just want to see the individuals perform the way we expect them to. And Cedric Mullins is one of those guys. Ryan Mountcastle, Austin Hayes, guys like that are the guys that I want to see stand out personally. You know, so when they lose 10-1, but Cedric Mullins is a home run, I that's a success for me. That's, you know, that's an exciting thing that Cedric is doing his job if everyone else isn't. That's fine. Like, that's completely fine by me.
And so next up, we're going to get to Cy Young, and I'll start with this one, cause I know we're going to have the same guy again. And this would be really the Orioles' other all-star right now, had he not gotten injured and ended up on the IL. And we know he's not going to be back till after the all-star break, which means, unfortunately, John Means will not be on the all-star team, but he's pitched well enough for that to be the case. And 12 starts for Means so far on the season, a 2.28 ERA. You know, his FIP is a little up at 4.17, but that had to do with a couple of early starts in the year. But just unbelievable numbers for John Means. And the other thing here is, you know, you could argue, you know, can you make him the first half Cy Young if he's, you know, missed so much, not so much time, but a good amount of time on the injured list this last month. He's still second on the Orioles in innings pitched, despite he has missed this much time. 71 innings for John Means, only surpassed by Jorge Lopez, who has really done that because he's the only guy who's stayed healthy, and he's thrown 76 innings. And I mean, Means has been a Cy Young candidate, and if he didn't get injured, he'd still be in that conversation. But just can't wait for him to get back. And it was marvelous to watch him do what he did before the injury.
Yeah, I mean, this is another guy that you look at, not a high draft pick, not a guy who was ever a top prospect in this Orioles organization, but a guy who, you know, has clearly found a role for himself, you know, being the ace of this staff, and has clearly figured out what makes him a good pitcher. It's obviously the changeup. We can credit Chris Holt all we want for that, but John Means totally turned his career around when he started throwing that amazing changeup. He's got the fastball changeup combo. And as soon as he started working the breaking balls with the sliders, curveballs as well, and effectively as we saw in 2020, we knew this guy was going to be closer to a frontline starter than what he ever had been. And he was a guy who finished second for rookie of the year a few years ago. So John Means is not a guy who is, like I said, ever highly ranked, but he's found his way, you know, to make himself a good pitcher. If he's not throwing 100, he's not throwing 102, but he just has the pitchability and the ability to get guys out with what he's got. And he's kind of figured that out and carved that role. So, you know, John Means might be on the IL right now, and it's unfortunate to see it, but, you know, players get hurt all the time. He's going to come back and probably stronger than ever, and hopefully finish out the season with a sub-3 ERA. But I don't think there's anybody else who can qualify for Cy Young here. It's got to be John Means, best pitcher, really one of the best pitchers in baseball before he was injured. And like I said, it's unfortunate. Unfortunately, it happens sometimes, but, you know, John Means is the real deal, and he's going to come back, you know, even stronger next time.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, when he comes back, because it's not like it was some major, major injury, but the Orioles were being cautious for a number of obvious reasons. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, we know there have been some murmurs about, you know, what John Means maybe had in his glove, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what the spin rates look like too when he gets back. And we know how much they've affected a guy who was, you know, right in his Cy Young race with him and Gerrit Cole and his couple of starts since the enforcement. Yeah. But on the flip side, with John Means being on the IL during all of this implementation starting, if he was using stuff, it almost kind of benefits him to be on the injured list, because he can kind of sit back, hear what guys are saying, what they're getting away with, you know, if the sweat and the rosin is okay, you know, what they got Hector Santiago for the other day. You know, he can kind of take all this stuff in, and when he starts coming back, I'm sure he'll do a rehab start or two, can really start to play with this before it becomes an issue. And that might, you know, make it look like there was a very little change once he actually comes back.
Yeah, I think there's a whole Instagram account dedicated to trying to figure out John Means is cheating, something wrong along those lines. It's kind of stupid, but, you know, people are always going to do that, try to blow these players up for whatever they do. But I don't know what John Means was using. I hope, you know, for sure that he wasn't using anything illegal, but when he does come back, like you said, he's going to have time to sit back and kind of figure out what might work for him when he comes back. I think it's a big change for a lot of these pitchers, and especially just being checked after every single inning you come off the mound. And these checks were essentially the manager can tell you, you know, tell the umps at any time, you know, maybe check this guy, check that guy. So it's definitely a different game that he's going to come back to. But I have all the confidence in the world that John Means is still going to be the same guy, because he's just such a good pitcher. He's a quality pitcher. And you know, he's going to give the Orioles 7, 8, maybe even 9 innings sometimes when he comes back. And like you said, he threw so many innings for that basically the first half of the year that he's still in second place for the Orioles as far as innings goes, because of, you know, these back-to-back-to-back quality starts that he kept putting up. So, you know, he was really hot there for a few months, and it really benefited the Orioles, even if they weren't winning every time he came out.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, even if he wasn't having the Cy Young season he was having, the dude threw a no-hitter. And on this staff right now, if anyone would have thrown a no-hitter, they would have gotten this award. Then you add on to the fact that he was one of the best pitchers in baseball. But next up, I want to get to the categories that will at least maybe have some different answers, because I think every single person would have said Mullins and Means. But let's stick on the pitching side. Let's get to best reliever, because I think there are a couple choices for this one, but Zach, I'll let you make your choice first.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of him for a while. I had to pick him here. I still think he's been the most reliable guy that when he comes out, I have the most confidence in him, and that's Tanner Scott. I know a lot of people are not big fans of, you know, Scott. He has terrible control. I shouldn't say he's terrible control, but it goes in and out nightly. There will be nights where Tanner Scott is dotting the corners 98, 99, and then there will be nights where, you know, the ball is hitting the backstop every other pitch. So, you know, Tanner Scott is definitely up and down, and he's taken his lumps this season. He's had his struggles, but this is a guy to me who has the best raw stuff on this team. I think that there's pretty much no question there. And when he's using it effectively with that slider fastball combo, it's just so electric, and not many guys can hit him. I mean, you look at what Aroldis Chapman does with that fastball slider combo. It's you know, very similar to what Tanner Scott does. And it's basically impossible to hit it when he's got everything going. So, you know, maybe he's had some rough outings. He's had some outings where it's been 2 or 3 earned runs, but when Tanner Scott comes out, I'm still more confident than a Paul Fry or a Cole Saucer or any of the other better relievers in this Orioles bullpen. But, you know, I hope there are other guys that get to be as reliable as I think Scott has been for me.
And I'm going to pick one of the guys you just mentioned, and that was Paul Fry. And I think, honestly, Fry, Sulcer, and Scott are kind of your main choices right here. But I'm going to take Paul Fry. And I think one of the reasons is, you know, that Brandon Hyde kind of trusted him to give him the closer role when it clearly wasn't working out with Cesar Valdez after about a month here this season. And, right. You know, Paul Fry's numbers are really interesting. You know, 29 and a third innings so far. That's fourth among the Orioles' main relievers, although, you know, some of the longer guys like Wells and Plutko are ahead of him for obvious reasons. You know, the strikeout rate has been fantastic. Second on the team at 32.8%. Actually, you know, surprisingly, just basically even with Tanner Scott's strikeout rate, which is kind of interesting because you think as Tanner Scott is the guy who all the outs he's going to get are strikeouts at times. And, you know, for a guy like Paul Fry, 29 and a third innings, a 3.68 ERA, but a 2.09 FIP. So it tells you he's gotten a little bit unlucky this year. He still hasn't given up a home run. Which is really interesting because he's had a couple of bad outings. And I think the issue with Paul Fry is he's had a couple of bad outings at bad times this year. And that has just really ballooned what honestly has been a really, really good season otherwise. And we might talk about this game a little bit later, but of course, you know, last Saturday against Toronto, when, you know, Paul Fry comes in for a three run save, you know, they're up 7-4 and just couldn't throw strikes and gives up 4 runs and blows the save. You know, he had another game that I was at earlier this year at home where it was, you know, he came in a 1-run game in the 8th and gave up 3 or 4 runs. And he's had a couple of big blow up outings, but I think overall Fry has shown to be the best reliever. And when he's on, here's the big thing about Paul Fry, you know, when he's on, at least, you know, he's throwing strikes. He, you know, does not have the walk rate that Tanner Scott does. Although Fry needs to get his walk rate down. It's not good. It's not nearly what the Tanner Scott issue is. And, you know, the other thing with Paul Fry is he is a left-hander who you trust equally, basically, against righties and lefties. He's been kind of a reverse splits guy his whole career, and that is super, super big for a reliever you're going to trust. And the other thing with Paul Fry, I think he might be the only guy the Orioles trade at the deadline this year, and Michael Elias has shown last year that he's pretty good at getting value out of these, you know, lesser-known reliever types. And, you know, that could make us like Paul Fry even more because, you know, he could be a piece a couple years down the road, but he could also bring back a Kevin Smith or a Terran Vavra like Michael Elias did last year with some of the relievers. And that does make him more valuable to this current Orioles team. But I think the Paul Fry blowups have kind of gotten in the way of what's been a really, really good season.
No, I mean, I think that's definitely the pick I would have gone with if it wasn't Scott. They both had the outings where, you know, like you said, they've blown up a little bit and there's been a lot of walks. And, you know, you mentioned that one game where the Orioles were winning and then, you know, Paul Fry ended up basically blowing the entire game for them. And Tanner Scott has had his share of that too. You know, there's no obviously perfect reliever in this bullpen right now. They don't have, you know, a shutdown closer or anything, but I think Paul Fry and Tanner Scott are the two guys that are the most reliable right now. And then you could throw Cole Saucer into that conversation as well, because he has been very good with a smaller sample size than what Fry and Scott have put up. But yeah, I think either would have definitely been good picks.
Yes, also a solid pick as well. This was an interesting one I wanted to do. I got thinking of this next award we're going to give out because I am one to very much try and do the Orioles, every player that played for the team, Sporkle at the end of the year, especially over the last couple of seasons. And the award here is most forgettable player. And I got to say, there are some key entries into this award, guys that are already out of the organization and have played for the Orioles this year. So right. I wanted to hear your pick on most forgettable player / the guy that most people are likely to miss on the Sporkle in a couple of years.
Yeah, I thought of it the same way because I always do the Sporkle as well. And I always miss, you know, some of the, I guess, the bullpen guys that get like 5, 6 appearances. But the guy I'm about to mention is a bullpen guy. And he only got 1 appearance before he was gone for the Orioles. So Jay Flaw is the guy that is the most forgettable Oriole for me. You know, was an Orioles prospect for a little bit. I don't even know if you want to call him a prospect, but just a minor leaguer for the Orioles for quite a long time. And then DFA'd pretty quickly after an appearance. So Jay Flaw, to me, you look at, you know, the end of the year, I'm never going to remember that Jay Flaw pitched the Orioles. I think Brandon Waddle could have been a good pick here. He's another guy where I would never in a million years remember that Brandon Waddle was an Oriole for like a game or so. But usually it's these relievers that always trip me up. I'll usually get through like all the utility guys. Like I feel like if Domingo Leyva is DFA'd in 2 days, I would still probably get Domingo Leyva on that Sporkle. But some of these relievers, you know, especially like Flaw, who's now pitching in another organization, I believe, there's no chance I will remember that at the end of the year. But I really like this award, actually.
So we'll get back to the Orioles talk in just a second, but first got to tell you about betonline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Now we're about halfway through this baseball season as we're talking about today, and it is a good time to maybe try and place some wagers, maybe on who you think is going to win the big awards, you know, not just these made-up Orioles midseason awards we're talking about today, but like MVP in the American League, do you think it's going to be Shohei Ohtani? I think it got a pretty good chance there. But it's not just baseball you can bet on. You can get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including the NBA and the NHL. How about both of them, you know, either in the conference finals or in the Stanley Cup finals? And then you've got UFC and MMA action as well. So before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. And if you head there and sign up today, you can receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit over at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts.
Yeah, Jay Flaw did catch on with Atlanta. They claimed him. I think he pitched in a couple games.
Yeah, that's
the Braves.
What it was.
Didn't go well. I believe he's in AAA with Gwinnett right now. For this one, you know, it's actually a guy you mentioned. I'm going to go with Brandon Waddell. And now the reason why is because, you know, there's a couple guys in here who have had one game or one appearance so far for the Orioles, but I think some of them are going to be remembered a little better. I think Flaw, just because he was drafted by the Orioles, makes him just maybe a touch more memorable because people might have, you know, maybe seen him at a minor league game, you know, potentially at some point for the O's. Mickey Janis, obviously, with the knuckleball, if he never comes back up, people are going to remember that.
Definitely.
And so for me, honestly, and Isaac Mattson being part of the Bundy trade, I think makes him more memorable. So for me, it came down to Waddell and Wade, Connor Wade, who came up the other day. And I got to go with Brandon Waddell because Connor Wade at least has pitched in Norfolk this year and, you know, was signed by the Orioles in the offseason. Waddell was claimed off of waivers by the Twins, pitched in one game with the Tides, pitched in one game with the Orioles, and then was DFA'd and I believe is now with the Pirates. Either way, he's with another organization. So literally he pitched in one game in AAA, one game in the majors, and that was it. There's basically no chance I ever remember that name. And it's not like he was, you know, a more veteran guy. Like, it's only his second year in the big leagues anyway, so it's not like I would remember him from baseball otherwise. He is there's no way I'm getting that on the Sporkle. But I did just kind of want to go to the next one because, you know, this is more so happy things about the Orioles and your biggest surprise of the 2021 season. There's a couple of candidates and obviously Cedric Mullins is a candidate and you could pick him, but who are you going to go with there?
I think this has to be the toughest one, actually. I think if you look at this one, it is the toughest one, but I actually went with Cole Saucer. Cole Saucer to me, you know, Cedric Mullins, like you said, he would have been the obvious pick. I think Mullins is the biggest surprise, but outside of Cedric Mullins, I think you have to go with Cole Saucer. You know, he pitched, he was basically made the closer at, you know, in early 2020. I believe he closed out the first game or the second game of the season in 2020, not the first because they got, you know, crushed in that game against the Red Sox, but I believe he closed out the second game in Fenway. And, you know, I think we all saw him as a guy who came from the Rays, you know, kind of came up through their system, and the Rays really know how to develop pitchers. You know, we know that the Rays really turn out very, very many good pitchers. So I had a lot of confidence in Saucer being someone, you know, that could be a strike thrower, could be a back of the bullpen guy for the Orioles. And it just didn't work out last year. We now know he had that injury, that foot injury that basically, you know, basically turned him into a different pitcher. This was a guy who really didn't have much control. This is a guy who didn't look confident on the mound at the end of 2020, but he comes out this year, starts with the Tides, and then comes out and has been a real game changer for the Orioles, in my opinion. I think that Saucer has become a very, very reliable guy outside of Tanner Scott and Paul Frye, as we mentioned before. This is a guy who was not on the opening day roster, and I don't think a lot of people would have seen being an impact player for the Orioles at this point. So I think Cole Saucer to me is definitely the biggest surprise of this team, but you know, Cedric Mullins is definitely the other one there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously both good choices. And Mullins, we've talked so much about that, you know, he probably is the biggest surprise. But I like the Sulcer pick because, you know, after he was the closer, as you said, you know, it kind of went all downhill. And, you know, it was interesting to learn about that foot injury that he had because it kind of explained a lot of things. And now that we've seen him this year, presumably healthy, it kind of explains things even more for the Orioles and for Cole Sulcer. But for me, you know, this was definitely tough as well, because I feel like the guys we've expected to be good have ended up being good enough. And then, you know, we've gotten the big surprise, which was kind of the huge surprise in Cedric Mullins, just, you know, being able to be an all-star and you know, be our MVP through halfway through the season. I'm going to say Freddie Galvis is my biggest surprise of the season. You know, he started off horrendously, and I don't know what we exactly expected from Freddie Galvis. We knew he was coming in to be the shortstop, replace Iglesias. And, you know, he's on the injured list right now, and he's going to be out for an extended period of time. But after an abysmal start, people were kind of, I mean, me included, were kind of out on Freddie Galvis after about 3 weeks. Like, he had like two hits. You know, he wasn't playing good defense. It looked bad. And all of a sudden, Galvis has turned out, you know, Fangraphs has him at a 1.5 WAR through this season so far. I mean, that's pretty good. That's,
yeah,
you know,
that's really good.
Second among Orioles position players right now behind Mullins. You know, he's been solid. He's got a 249 average, 306 on base. You know, he's got himself 9 home runs on the year. And I think the Orioles are going to miss him a lot right now. And that's especially shown when you see lineups of, you know, Valleca, Arias, and Leyba in the infield. But, you know, he was a steady veteran presence whose defense got better throughout the year. He's been around the block, and he got really hot for a couple stretches, especially in May when he was one of the best hitters. You know, he was kind of the number two option behind Mullins for a while, it seemed, in this lineup. I was just surprised by the impact he has given the Orioles. But I did want to flip it to the other side here, and I feel like there's kind of more options here. But I'll go to you for biggest disappointment of the year so far.
Yeah, another one where there's definitely options, because there's been a lot of disappointments. I struggle with two of them here, and I don't want to give away your pick at all. I don't know who it is, but my two guys here were Dean Kramer and Matt Harvey. The two guys I was deciding between. For Dean Kramer, it was because of the offseason hype. And for Matt Harvey, it was basically because of what he put up the first few starts here in Baltimore. Matt Harvey was excellent the first few starts and, you know, just couldn't follow that up at all. And now is a guy who, you know, is giving up 6-7 earned runs a game. But I went with Dean Kramer. I decided with Dean Kramer because, you know, I think Dean Kramer was a guy who people looked at as a rookie of the year guy. He was very, very effective in 2020. You know, obviously a decently highly ranked prospect for the Orioles. Never a top 100 guy, never in that echelon of prospects, but a guy who, you know, was definitely thought of as by the Orioles as a guy who was great stuff. You know, he led the minors in strikeouts for 1 year. I believe that was a year he was traded, the Manny Machado trade. So a guy that you look at, you know, maybe becoming the headliner of that Manny Machado trade, especially because Yusnail Diaz is not doing much down with the Tides, and he's been injured most of his Orioles career. So, you know, Dean Kramer, you expected him to come out and probably be the number two behind John Means, and he just hasn't been able to throw strikes. It's just clearly different on the mound this year than what it was from last year. The confidence isn't there for me. And I don't think, you know, he's really just not locating with any of his pitches. He just doesn't have it right now. So now obviously with the Tides again, he's been up and down a few times already. It's been a really, really bad season for Dean Kramer. Even with the Tides, he hasn't pitched exceptionally well. So I don't think, you know, I think Dean Kramer, just based on that offseason hype, that rookie of the year hype that some people talked about, I think it has to be the biggest disappointment for me.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting with Matt Harvey, because I think the only reason he would come up there is because he was solid in the first month and then just became unwatchable. But really, if you compare his stats to his stats the last 2 years, he's still been better in the major leagues this year than he was the last 2 years, which is a little sad, but you know, it's what happens. And he's still in the rotation. You gave your kind of second pick. I did want to give my second pick here. My second pick here was Sean Armstrong.
Okay.
Honestly, that guy was one of the Orioles' best relievers in 2020, and he has been DFA'd. Now, luckily for the Orioles, he didn't get claimed. He's in Norfolk. Maybe they can try to fix him, but he was just, I mean, everything in the middle of the plate this year, giving up big hit after big hit. I mean, it was tough to watch. Hopefully he does figure it out, because I think he still has some sort of promise. But I'm going to go with a guy who is disappointing for certain reasons. I'm going to take Pedro Severino. And, you know, I think we knew his defense was bad. And we knew coming into the year that Pedro and Cisco was going to be a bad defensive combination. And, you know, with Austin Wynn's up now, he's throwing out runners. It's getting a little better. But I still think Severino's defense has actually been worse than we thought it would be. His pitch framing has been just as bad as it's always been. I feel like his just sheer defense behind the plate has been bad. He cost John Means a perfect game. That is still hurting me a little bit. But I think the big thing with Pedro is his bat. And the big thing with him versus Chancisco, especially early in this year and late last year, was, okay, neither can defend, but at least Pedro Severino can hit. He was one of the better hitting catchers in the American League in 2020. He's been horrendous at the plate this year. I mean, not Chancisco bad, which is why he's still on the team, but it has not been good for Pedro Severino at the dish. I mean, his strikeout rate is up at 23%. It's one of the higher rates on the team. He's hitting for zero power. I mean, his ISO power is 089. He's only got three home runs. You know, he had a three homer game in 2019 in Texas. He's got three on the season this right. year, and he's played in 53 games. I mean, 233 average, 310 on base. I mean, WRC plus at 78. You know, he's been a well below average hitter. And I really just think the power thing has been the thing I've looked at all year. Like, if he's going to be that bad defensively and he's not going to hit for a good average, you at least need to get some homers out of him. And at three home runs, like, the Orioles finally optioned Chancisco, they DFA'd Chancisco. Like, we're getting to the point here where, like, Brett Cumberland is mashing in AAA and right. like Pedro might be the next to go because it's so bad at the plate right now that it can't cover up his defense like I think it did the last 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, another guy who presumably would have had some trade value if he had been good enough this year, or really even somewhat good, like any semblance of being good, because he's had none of that. He's been arguably one of the worst players in Major League Baseball. I would say he's down there in the bottom five of Major League Baseball. The defense is inexplicably terrible. There are plays that he simply just doesn't even catch the ball. And there's some things where Pedro Severino just, he plays very relaxed. He plays laid back and it just hurts him. So, you know, Pedro Severino, definitely a good pick for the biggest disappointment. That's probably my number three. But maybe even number two, because like you mentioned with Matt Harvey, I mean, he hasn't had much success in the past 2 or 3 years. So I would definitely agree with that as a big disappointment.
All right. So we'll go for one more on the negative side before we finish positive. And I did want to, you know, be able to highlight a couple of games throughout the first 81 of the season. So, you know, let's start with you on just the worst loss. And again, there's been a lot of losses, over 50 of them. And some of them have just not made you feel anything. And some of them have been particularly disappointing, but which one kind of left the worst taste in your mouth so far? And there's been a lot of losses, but which one do you feel hurt the most in the first half here this season?
Yeah, so it was actually one I attended, and I believe you were there too. I saw on Twitter that you were there, I think. They lost 14-1 to the Mets on June 9th. It was a Wednesday night where Matt Harvey, of course, we just talked about, started against Taiwan Walker. And they lost 14-1 in a game that they just got shellacked in every part of the game. I mean, you just couldn't play a worse game with what the Orioles did. There are a lot of people who say, oh yeah, I hate those 3-2 losses where they go in tied into the bottom of the ninth and you get walked off and it's 3-2. Personally, I'd much rather see that. I'd much rather see the Orioles play a close game and get walked off on than lose 14-1 and just get beaten in literally every part of the game. And especially being there for me made it even worse. I had to stay the whole game. Because I always stay the whole game and I go to Orioles game. So, you know, you watch them lose 14-1 and it's just depressing, simply. You know, you just don't play well in any facet of the game. They were basically destroyed in every single category. They only got 6 hits in that game. They gave up 2 home runs to Billy McKinney, a guy that you just can't give up 2 home runs to. They gave up a home run to Mason Williams, another guy you just can't give up home runs to. So, just an absolute horrible game. They had come off 2 games winning 18-5 and 10-3 in the past 2 games, and they lost 14-1 the next game. So for me, it has to be the worst loss of the season. I just can't stand when I see bad baseball like that. I got to see some semblance of decent baseball. Even if you lose 14-1, I still want something better than what they showed that night.
Yeah, that's a good one. I was indeed in the building seeing Matt Harvey get killed by the Mets again. Yeah. The Mason Williams home run, because of how terrible he was to watch in an Oriole uniform in 2020, I think that one hurt the most, to be honest. And that was pretty bad. And I did want to give a couple of honorable mentions before I got to mine. I believe Saturday, May 29th, game 2 of a doubleheader in Chicago against the White Sox. A Billy Hamilton home run beats the Orioles and beats John Means in the Orioles. That one just really, really stings to this point. The game against the Blue Jays I mentioned a couple weeks ago when they go in, you know, Ryan Mountcastle has 3 home runs. Cedric Mullins has 2 home runs. Everybody's going crazy. Paul Fry blows a 3-run save in the ninth. They give up 6 runs in the ninth. That one really hurt. Not even because of how the ninth went, just because that was supposed to be a day of celebrating young Orioles. I mean, you hit 6 home runs in the game. You have you know, Cedric hit two, Mountcastle hit three, you know, Mountcastle takes this, you know, standing ovation curtain call. And then that's how you lose in the ninth. That one really hurt. But I'm going to have to go with another game I attended. I've actually been to two games this year, Zach. And those two games are going to be the two that we mention as our worst games of the year. Now, this one hurts a little bit because it was my first game back in Camden Yards since 2019, since the start of the pandemic. But it was actually a game I mentioned briefly as well a little bit earlier. And that was a loss for the Orioles 9-7 against Tampa Bay Rays back on May 19th. It was a Wednesday night game. John Means, it was his first home start since he threw the no-hitter, so everybody was a little amped up. He didn't pitch great, but he pitched okay, gave up four runs over six in a third innings. Adam Pletko came in and proceeded to give up basically back-to-back hits that came out to an RBI and a home run, I think in two pitches that ended up tying the game. And then Paul Fry gives up three runs in the eighth inning in a tie game that ended up in an Orioles 9-7 loss. And I think it just hurt a little bit more because it was my first game back. John Means was pitching. There was a little bit of buzz, and the Orioles just blew a pretty huge lead. I mean, Trey Mancini hitting a couple of home runs in that game. The Orioles led 5-0 early. Trey hit a three-run homer early, and it just all went away. And I think it hurt more because it was my first game there. But let's finish on a positive note. I'll go first, then I'll let you finish it off with the best game of the year. And, you know, the Orioles, they, you know, have had now two walk-offs on the season, but I'm actually not going to take either of those. And I'm going to go for a road game April 7th in New York, an Orioles 4-3 win in 11 innings against the Yankees. That would be the game in which Anthony Santander from right field throws out at the plate the runner who I believe was Gio Urshela, trying to come home on a sack fly to end the game as the Orioles beat the Yankees 4-3 on the road. It was a weird game in which a Chance Cisco RBI single in the top of the 11th gave the Orioles the lead. I think that was his first hit of the year, maybe. And then in the 10th, the Orioles shouldn't have scored, but Gleyber Torres made a horrendous throwing error with two outs that gave the Orioles a run. I think it was fun because it was an extra inning win. It ended on an awesome play, you know, throwing a guy out of the plate. And Yankees Twitter was an absolute shambles at the end of this game. So that is why that is my number one game of the year. But where do you go on your best game to watch of the first half this year as we finish this out?
I'm seriously going to go with last night. And what we're recording this on Wednesday, but 13-3 win over the Houston Astros on June 29th. You know, a lot of people like the walk-offs. A lot of people like the close games. I'm someone who just likes to see a team destroy another team. That's for me. I want to see my team perform well in all facets of the game. Just like I said with the worst loss, I don't want to see them get crushed in all facets of the game. I also want to see them, you know, do well in everything, which is what I saw last night. You know, 13-3 over a first place team, a team that has made two World Series in the past 5 years. A team that is just extremely tough to beat. Like the Astros are stacked in every position. They come out every night with an all-star lineup, you know, a pitcher that could be an all-star. They're just a really, really tough team to beat. Cedric Mullins picks up four hits. Austin Hayes picks up two hits. Santander picks up two hits. You know, everyone hit throughout that lineup except Ryan Mountcastle, really. But even on the night without Trey Mancini playing, they just hit the ball so well. 16 hits, 13 runs. It's just a game for me that I personally enjoy watching when they just perform so well. The pitching was so good. You know, Adam Pletko was really solid last night after a lot of bad outings. You know, I want to say Alex Wells was fine last night. He wasn't incredible, but he got the job done and gave the Orioles a lot of length that they really needed. You know, they really need a guy to have that long relief role locked down. It looks like Wells could be that guy. And then Dylan Tate comes on for 2 2/3 of scoreless ball at the end there. It looked to be the probably best Dylan Tate that I've seen all year. So to see the Orioles perform so well in all facets of the game, especially when you started Travis Lakins, like this was supposed to be a bullpen game and they start Travis Lakins and they beat maybe the best team in baseball right now. So for me, it has to be the best game of the year. That was so entertaining to me, especially you know, that 7th, 8th, 9th inning, just so much fun to watch. That's, you know, entertaining baseball for me.
What a series it's been for the Orioles. Hopefully by the time everyone's listening to this, the Orioles sent Matt Harvey out there and swept the Houston Astros, which would be unbelievable. But Zach, thank you so much for coming on to do these Orioles midseason awards. You know, it's been tough. Not a lot of wins for the Orioles. We knew it wouldn't be a lot of wins. At points, it's been honestly a little tougher to watch than we thought at times. But I think we're able to pull out at least some of the positives from these first 81 games. And, you know, here's hoping the Orioles can have some sort of kind of perfect mix in the next 81 games where they play better baseball, but they end up, you know, with a pick fairly high and they get back to looking a little better next year. But Zach, thank you so much once again.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. It's definitely going to be good to watch the Orioles just play, you know, better at the small things. I think, you know, seeing things like Pedro Severino catching the ball is even an improvement over what they had in the first half of this year. You know, maybe some good defensive plays, maybe a Cedric Mullins and Trey Mancini all-star appearance. I don't know. You know, maybe Trey Mancini wins the home run derby. Stuff like that would be, you know, really bright spots for a real bad season for the Orioles. But I think there's you know, room for excitement, especially in September and August when you see some of these prospects make their debuts. You could even see a Kyle Bradish or something like that. So while it was a rough first half, there are some guys that definitely deserve some credit. And yeah, let's just hope they play some better baseball in that second half. But yeah, appreciate you having me.
Well, our thanks again to Zach Goodman for joining the podcast. Again, he is the co-host of the Nate Hit the Foul Pole pod and the co-host of the Bat Around over at Press Box, which you can see every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. You can follow Zach on Twitter at OrielsFan68 to get his thoughts pretty much every day on the O's. But that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast. Make sure to like and subscribe to the pod if you haven't already. Leave us a rating and a review if you can on Apple Podcasts. That really helps out a lot. We will be back tomorrow for the final episode of the week. We are previewing the Angels series as the O's go to Anaheim for some late night games this weekend. Taylor Blake Ward, who used to host the Locked On Angels podcast and covers that team very well, he's going to join us to talk everything Shohei Ohtani and then, you know, the other players on that team. But it's mostly going to be Shohei Ohtani. But hey, the Orioles are probably going to see old friends Dylan Bundy and Alex Cobb on the mound this weekend. So that should be interesting for Orioles fans. We'll be back with that tomorrow. But until then, this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.